So right now I have the pleasure of speaking with Gregorio Olivares Gutierrez. He's the editor-in-chief of the RetrogradeNews.com. He's also a freelance writer, and he writes for the Dallas Observer, where he covers local news and education. And he was the final editor of the Mercury, which we'll be discussing today, which was University of Texas at Dallas' student newspaper until campus administration fired him and the rest of the management team. He now works as the editor-in-chief of the Retrograde, as I mentioned. Their now new award-winning independent student newspaper. How's it going, Gregorio?
You know, it's going as well as it can, given the circumstances.
Yeah. And again, just to let our listeners know, first of all, this is now like a new thing we're doing. We're doing Academic Freedom on Life Support, we call it. And so we set up the podcast because of that. And I know you're going to start writing for SheerPost about some of the issues you've been writing about for The Observer, because you have a number of articles that's been covering the issues. For instance, I'll just go through it for people. I mean, we'll post this along with the podcast, but you've talked about trans college students. We're going to talk about banning newsstands and criminalizing speech, and among many other issues. But let's get into a little bit about what I discussed at first about the Mercury and then the Retrograde, because the Mercury was a paper, and this is happening across the United States, Purdue, it's happened in Indiana, it's happening across the United States, of both shutting down student newspapers and some of the staffs like yourselves working around the system to try to get the news out. So talk about a little bit about your kind of the situation that's happening, because it's obviously a part of academic freedom is this concept of free speech and having students be able to communicate with their other students, and journalism is a key part of that. So kind of give us a brief synopsis of what happened with you.
Yeah, so I had joined the student newspaper, The Mercury, in my freshman year after I saw this fantastic investigative news article covering someone who worked in our testing center on campus, was prosecuted in criminal court for torturing their girlfriend's cats. That is not something I had ever expected to see in the student newspaper. It felt controversial. It felt well-researched. And I was like, I want to be involved with something like this. That's what brought me to join the Mercury. It's what kind of like was my guiding light for my short stint there. Started off as a staff writer. They immediately asked me to start covering breaking news car crashes through our apartment buildings, sex offenders on campus, and the growing protest movement on campus. I was a freshman in fall of 2023, and that is when we started to see the growth of what some historians I know started calling the student intifada, where students across the country were doing these protests in support of Palestine in response to the October 7th attacks and an increased number of kind of like violent incidents against the Palestinian people on the Gaza Strip. So it was this sort of thing of like, I'm coming into this, there's all of these protests going on, and I want to document all of it as best I can, because UGD had never seen anything like this. We are a relatively new campus. The only reason UGD doesn't have a sordid history of racism and its own KKK chapter is because we weren't around when that was happening at the rest of the UT system schools. And, you know, we're more than making up for our lack of an evil past with some recent evil actions, at least in my opinion, because the crackdown against students has been relentless. When students started to express themselves on our campus Spirit Rocks, a forum that had been there for over 20 years, our administration at first congratulated them. The president of the school at the time, Richard Benson, sent a thank you email to everyone saying he really appreciated how civil everyone was behaving themselves by painting on the rocks. But the day that students wrote Zionism equals Nazism, a political message, even if one doesn't agree with it, that is when the university decided that was too much. Let's find a way to change this. And on the very first day of Thanksgiving break, the rocks were suddenly gone. The only reason we knew the rocks were gone was because it happened to coincide with Trans Day of Remembrance, and we had trans students who had told the university, hey, we're going to go paint the rocks at this time, and then the rocks weren't there. So it's this sort of thing of like gradual escalations continued through the entire spring semester. We wrote some editorials criticizing the university's action on that. We criticized the end of diversity, equity, and inclusion and how that was being handled at UTD. The state law that banned DEI in Texas, SB 17, was quite vague in what it did and did not allow. It didn't say that you can't teach diversity, because that would be an insane thing to write into law that would be immediately overturned. Instead, it was like this vague set of prescriptions telling universities, like, hey, we really don't want you to do that, please. And universities responded by overcomplying in an attempt to curry favor with the state of Texas and the government officials down in Austin. We didn't like that. Students didn't like that. So we wrote about it. We platformed those opinions. We saw an increase of tension with our university because of this. Office of Communications telling us that, hey, we actually have to be present in every single meeting you do with staff members, or else there won't be a meeting. Make sure to send us those questions in writing. Make sure X and Y are all being ticked off. So instead of having the normal journalistic process we used to experience here on campus, we now had to go through all of these bureaucratic hoops just to get a statement that had nothing to do with the questions we asked, because the Office of Communications isn't the experts we're looking to talk to. They're just a PR branch for the school that tries to massage any statement. And then May 1st happened. May 1st was my first day as editor-in-chief of the Mercury, and it was the first and only day of our encampment. Violent police raid of it. We covered it in a breaking news style, providing live updates throughout the day, and our campus administration was furious. Our advisor at the time was demoted. 2 days after that, we met with our new advisor, who said that it was journalistic malpractice that we had chosen to cover a protest on campus and the violent response to it. In my opinion, I think it might have been malpractice if we chose not to speak about it at all. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. They did fire me later because of our continued persistence on investigative journalism. We had a meeting where they told us that unless administrators sat in every single one of our meetings, we would not be allowed to travel to educational conferences anymore. I told them that that was prior review. I would not be doing prior review so long as I was editor-in-chief. And they did fire me afterwards, so I maybe shouldn't have given them that idea.
I unfortunately, like, that's the thing, is like they probably already had that idea in mind. So even if you gave them that, and the big thing is, right, because again, part of what I've read about the cat story that you talk about is this concept of curiosity, right? Is that you're curious. And the great thing about journalism in general is that people are generally curious, and it feels like they're killing that curiosity. And it's both in journalism, but also in schooling as well. It's like, okay, we want you to go to school. We want you to learn how to like count rocks or do something, but we don't want you to ask too many questions, right? I mean, that's seemingly what, I mean, you're much younger than I am, but that's what it kind of feels like even nationwide, right? It's like, okay, like you're saying, it's like, yeah, you could have this cute little newspaper, but don't cover the protest. Don't ask students anything, right? I mean, that's kind of what I gather from it. But it goes to the self-censorship question. But do you feel like there's that curiosity? And with your staff, do you feel like that with journalism, is it still alive and well? I mean, with the retrograde?
Yeah, at least within our staff, I feel that it's alive and well. We don't have a journalism program at UTD. And when I was in charge of the Mercury, I thought that was our biggest challenge. How do we get people to do journalism if we don't have a program that's giving us like pre-prepped students? I have since found that to be one of our kind of like strongest attributes, because the only people that want to join the student newspaper that will not give you money is a rebellious 501c3 organization. Are the students who are like really curious, who are dedicated to it. We have students from computer science, from business, from like physics and astronomy, political science, philosophy, all sorts of students represented here who have different interests, who have different things that they're curious about. And our rule is just, yeah, bring us what you're curious about. If you can meet our standards, which are pretty much just talk to people, interview sources, provide us those kind of like receipts that you did the good work of journalism, then we'll publish it. We want everyone to have fun. We want everyone to learn. And we've had a pretty consistent streak of that. Most of my time now is kind of like just seeing, oh, what public records request will I file next? I'm probably going to file a few after we read through the Epstein files recently. Our school was surprisingly, or not so surprisingly, given your take on academics, in them. And we're just writing a report on that. And I know that the university isn't going to reply to my request for comment. So I'll just use the legal methods available, and that'll spin into its own fun article later down the line.
as you said, you have, I read it somewhere, I don't know if it was in the Columbia Journalism Review interview with you or, but it was that the curiosity, but also the, you have the time of a college student. So you have this curiosity. Yeah. And so you have that time. And I find that too. I mean, it's just, it's a question. I look at journalism as somewhat of almost like what happens with comedians as well. We see the world differently. Anybody who's ever looked at something and gone, well, that looks weird to me. That looks different to me. And people think about things differently and ask different questions than the majority, which could be frustrating at times, but.
Yeah, it can definitely be frustrating, but I really appreciate the new look on life it gave me, because going into university, I was like, I would hate to break any rule. I want to make sure all of my T's are crossed, I's dotted, everything needs to be perfect. And I would never speak back to administrator because, you know, they have the PhD, they must be the expert, they must know stuff. Doing just any amount of journalism at my campus showed me that is untrue. People with PhDs, like, they have their expertise in the subject they did their expertise on, but that doesn't make them an expert in everything. And when it comes to university administrators, they are not an expert in students, and they're barely capable of managing the actual university itself. Like, it is laughable how many scandals we've been able to uncover by simply asking people, like, hey, did you do the thing that you said you were going to do? And then it's revealed, no, they didn't, and they did some horrible other thing instead. And it's that sort of thing of like, yeah, I now see administrators more human than I used to before. There's no real like authority that they carry with them, because how could they be? They are just as, if not more, fallible than the students they seek to educate, if they even seek to educate them, given how business-like our schools are today.
Yeah. And there's a question, right? I'm going to ask this of every guest, because again, this is the Academic Freedom on Life Support podcast project. And my guest right now, I'm going to get your name, Gregorio Olivares Gutierrez. He's the editor-in-chief of the retrogradenews.com. There's this thing of two things I'll ask, because I ask a lot of the same questions, because again, that's how we're going to get answers to it, because there's a big sticking point between academic freedom and freedom of speech, right? These are two separate issues. But the thing is, like, as you have more and more people, like you talk about physicists coming in to be journalists, right? It's like, well, yeah, if I have freedom in a political science class to talk about political science issues, that's obviously important. But if I have a class of physicists and we're not going to have any kind of open discussion of anything other than, you know, the universe or the Big Bang Theory, right? I think the students are left lost. And something that I want to get into with this project is something that Ralph Nader's talked about, right, a lot about, and what you're talking about with your education in journalism now, is that we've lost, you know, civics. We've lost this concept of critical thinking across the country. So what do you see like that at university, like with professors you've spoken to, and what's the feeling on campus with this concept of like of freedom of speech versus academic freedom? You know, like,
it's such a complex topic, especially in Texas, because both are under attack in a way that's kind of like, I guess, unprecedented in the neoliberal era. It's very new for these attacks to be so blatant, so open in how they are. Typically, you would expect to see maybe some more subterfuge, some more kind of like decorum in the approach, where it's like, oh, you know, you can't do it because of like this technicality. No, that's all out the window. Now it's just like, yeah, we hate the woke, we hate the diversity, we don't want any of that in our campuses. And it's that sort of thing of like, well, What does that mean when you're writing that into the law? What does that mean for schools? And schools are right now dealing with that. We recently had the state of Texas pass one law called SB 37. The law pretends that it's about, you know, helping rein in universities so that they're really giving Texas taxpayers the best for their money. But like, the law is poorly written, and all it really does is create weird, stringent curriculum review boards, and who's going to be operating them is completely up in the air, and the complete abolition of faculty governance at universities. It calls for the kind of like dissolution of faculty senates, and that's something the UT system went all the way with. UTD used to have something called the Academic Senate, where faculty gathered together, did a ton of paperwork, did a ton of like debate, they would talk to the university president, and then they'd come to decisions about who should be on which committees on campus, who should be writing which policy, what policy needs to be updated. Regular bureaucratic debates that you would expect to happen at any school. That's gone completely. They had a replacement called the Interim Faculty Advisory Committee. It met zero times in the like 5 or so months that it was active. It's been dissolved, and there's no clear indication of what comes next anymore. All the committees that used to be run by the Academic Senate have members who are there until the end of the spring semester. What will happen to them? Entirely unknown when it comes to that spring semester, like that basic function of how a university operates. Who's on the ethics review board for all of our experiments? Who's on the student conduct board? Who's on X and X board, et cetera? Like UTD has over 40 of them, is all up in the air. And when it comes to freedom of speech, that has been attacked with the use of kind of like state force. When UTD students chose to express themselves at the university encampment, a demonstrably peaceful event that even the president of UTD after the fact said was known to have been peaceful. They knew they didn't have weapons, and yet they still responded with over 60 police officers from across North Texas, full riot gear, rifles, armored vehicles, snipers on the buildings for some reason, grenade launchers, to disperse them. When you are a student who wants to protest, you do that because there's this long history of civic engagement, of wanting to express one's desire for something to be better, for something to change. There are students who are paying the largest amount when it comes to Texas public universities, $14,000 in tuition fees. And they don't want that money going to what they see as a genocide, what they see as war crimes happening not just in Israel, but across the world, funded by the U.S. military industrial complex. These are students who are airing out their political grievances, and there are students who are counter-protesting them. And that's all perfectly fine. It's part of the forum of civic discourse that universities used to be. But when you have snipers and grenade launchers and rifle-toting policemen storming a student study session in the encampment, students don't want to protest anymore at all. UTD used to attract protests of about 100 to 300 students in size. Since May 1st, they haven't broken 30 students total because students no longer want to put themselves in that risk. They're paying tens of thousands of dollars for an education, and they don't see it as worthwhile to lose that investment just to express themselves, because they know that expression will be met with extreme violence. And even just the most banal things like drawing with chalk on campus is not allowed. I was sitting in our like campus center a few months ago, just drinking orange juice I bought from like our local stand on campus, not really doing anything, waiting for my next class to happen. I see some students pull out chalk. They start to draw like doves and watermelons in support of peace and the people of Palestine. An administrator who oversees our athletics department sees this, beelines towards them. I start recording because I'm like, oh, she's going to say something crazy. And she does. She tells them that their First Amendment ends where her policy about chalk begins. The fact that that is something she felt comfortable saying and stood with, forced those students to stop doing chalk, threatened them, is ridiculous to me. And of course students won't want to express themselves when this is the environment in which they operate. It's not unique to UTD. We're just emblematic of some of the worst trends going on, not only in Texas, but across the country. Universities are businesses that want to have a good image for possible donors and alumni, and students protesting doesn't look good. But they've chosen to respond to that by extreme violence, which also doesn't look good, but they're hoping that that can shut down these conversations fully.
And they use, obviously, I mean, the biggest one is fear. You mentioned like losing all these people because no one wants to be, it's the hard part of protest and fighting back, right? Which is that someone's putting a grenade launcher, even nonviolent means of rubber bullets and pepper spray. No one wants to get sprayed in the face. And especially if you have a generation of new protesters and new activists who are coming to this, because a lot of people are across the country coming to this, these issues in that way. And then they are out in the open about it, obviously. Yeah. I mean, and then the president and the federal government's bribing these universities, right? Whether they're actually taking money or rejecting plans, there's a lot of like that. And that's being kind of exposed, right? Across the country is how much you know, these universities rely on the federal government for money. There's so many interesting takeaways with your thing. I mean, the one that I got, I'm trying to like, because there were so many kind of good points that I was like, in my head, I'm like, wait. But the thing is, I want to ask you, because you mentioned this First Amendment situation, and you wrote a piece in, I'm going to see this now, June, about the dodgy Texas law that threatens campus speech. And so you talk about that a little bit here, right? But it's this question of, where does the First Amendment exist? Where does the protest exist? So you talked about a little bit about the chalk, but Texas now has laws on the books that basically has protest zones. And as you write, as long as like, and we just talked about a little bit, but can you expand on it a little bit about more about the law in which this is across the state? This isn't just academics, but this is across the state that police and these forces of power can decide where and when you can protest, right?
Yeah. So the retrograde is actually right now a plaintiff in a lawsuit against the UT system. The Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression is the group that's leading that kind of like lawsuit. And we're just there as like people who are impacted by the university policy and the law, which they see as unconstitutional. That law being SB 2972, which was passed during this previous state legislative session. This law isn't, again, like the whole facade of like, you know, let's pretend to do good things, let's pretend that there's a reason for this is gone. Senator Brandon Creighton, who is the author of this bill, who sponsored it throughout its kind of like whole legislative process, wrote a statement of intent where he said that this is to stop Palestinian students from protesting. And then the law itself, you know, it doesn't specify that, you know, it's here to stop the efforts of students who are in favor of Palestine, but it's really clear that that's exactly what it's about. There's a section saying students can't take down flags and replace them with a different flag. And I was like, well, that didn't happen at any UT schools. What could they be possibly referring to? And I looked into it, and it was a school in North Carolina. Students there took down the university flag, raised the Palestinian flag. That made Republicans there upset. And it got to Texas, where they just want to preempt it so that that doesn't happen at the schools. They had a law. Part of the law bans drums and like use of like audio amplifiers on campus. And it's like, again, that sort of thing of like, well, does that mean that students who are performers can't do their performances anymore? Drums and audio amplification are kind of key to that. But again, it's targeting expressly students using like microphones and megaphones to protest and chant. And it just so happens that everyone else gets caught up when the First Amendment is under such fire. And then, of course, what has gotten some of the most kind of like dramatic headlines and discussion, the 10 p.m. bedtime for the First Amendment. The law says that everything that is considered expressive activity cannot happen after 10 p.m. on university campuses. It then defines expressive activity as anything protected by the First Amendment. So it's just saying First Amendment activity can't happen after 10 p.m. Well, First Amendment activity is a ton of things. It covers religion. It covers the right to gather. It covers just talking to people, expressing yourself. For us as a newspaper, doing news. I'm not sure if every newsroom is like this, but at least our newsroom does a lot of our work well into the night. I don't think there's really been a publication deadline we submitted at a normal time or even met for the most part, because things happen. There's always some new kind of like crisis ongoing. And, you know, we have time as college students. Our first class isn't until like 1 p.m. So let's just stay up, do the news and have it ready to go. Well, after that 10 p.m. bedtime for the First Amendment. So there is that lawsuit right now. We have a injunction from a federal court down in Austin that said that, yes, it cannot be applied at the UT system schools, but that law is still in effect for all of the other public schools in the state of Texas. They have all of these restrictions on their First Amendment right. And again, it's laughably obvious that this is unconstitutional and that this is an infringement of the most basic rights of students. What do you mean I can't talk to people after 10 p.m. or I could get in trouble? Who is going to be enforcing that? I don't know. And the law doesn't specify.
I want to leave soon because we're going to have you on again. And again, my guest has been Gregorio Olivares Gutierrez. He's the editor-in-chief of the Retrograde News. But I want to talk about this, too, because you write in August about banning newsstands and this is another freedom. And I want to just quote this from your article here. While one might argue that print copies of newspapers on campuses are unnecessary in a world with easy access to online news, this stems from a misconception about the print and digital audiences of newspapers. In the past decade, research has shown that the lack of physical presence in an online-only environment serves as the death knell for independent and local papers, whose total readership dramatically drops off when physical readers simply don't make the jump to digital. And then it goes on to some very good points. But I want to ask that before we go. And then when we go, I ask you where we can find your stuff. But, you know, it's an interesting concept. So talk about that a little bit about your campus, but campuses in general, because this old kind of way of printing a newspaper does matter, because now we are in this place where we're able to choose what news we get, but oftentimes it's being curriculated is a terrible word, but it's being monitored and being subjective to all these corporate interests. So talk a little bit about that ban and how that has affected you guys, and about getting your news out there from other students, you know, and across the country again, because we have these situations, unfortunately, are happening across the United States right now.
Yeah, so that ban lasted pretty much that whole summer when this article was written. It was overturned the first day of the fall semester, but not in its entirety. We used to have like 30 campus locations that we were able to distribute at. It was all banned. We asked, hey, where did our kiosks go? That's when university administrators told us, actually, everyone is now banned, not just you. I guess a very blunt way to get around viewpoint discrimination, where they can say, oh, we're not just banning the retrograde, we're banning every newspaper. And it's that sort of thing of like, yeah, when the ban gets reversed, we're allowed 4 kiosks on campus and the university determines where they are. And it just so happens that they're in out of the way office spaces that students barely ever go to. So of course, that's going to be a limit to us, as if we didn't get those kiosk stands. Our primary mode of still distributing print, because we still have done print since that kind of like pseudo ban continued, has just been to physically distribute it, to just give it to students, to just leave it on different parts of campus. We're very into this idea of kind of like malicious compliance, where we have the university policy, and a lot of the time we know it better than our own administrators that supposedly are the ones who enforce them. So we're able to get around a lot of what they want to restrict us with by simply citing that policy to them. Students are allowed to distribute literature for free on campus. We are students. We're distributing literature. It's free. So we can just hand out our newspapers. There's been a few times where admin has tried to tell us, hey, you need to stop that. And then I just have my staff phone me up. And once I am involved, our administrators tend to kind of like back away, because I seem to have a reputation amongst them of like a problematic student that knows too much policy for their own good. But it's that sort of thing of, it's not just us that this happens to. It's everywhere. We continue to go to things like the Student Media Fest. We go to the Texas Intercollegiate Press Association. And these are events where student journalists, professional journalists gather together and discuss what's going on in their places, what's going on at their respective institutions. And what we have found is that people are going through these same issues, but a lot of the time they are scared to stand up for themselves to fight back. One of the most harrowing things that happened at the Student Media Fest that happened this year in Washington, D.C., we were giving a presentation just on our experience to a room full of students and like advisors across the country. And near the end of it, I said, I don't want to focus on our story. I want to focus on what you guys are dealing with, because I have, without a doubt, the understanding that you are going through these issues as well. And when we start to get these hands being raised, telling us about what they saw as like minor concerns, perhaps just like a small thing that could be brushed to the side, we find out that as they're saying it aloud, it is one of the most illegal First Amendment violations possible. One student that kind of like stood out to me particularly, they were from a California school. They were talking about how their newspaper was trying to do an investigation into some recent legal issue their university got into. It was some staff writers who were focused on this, but upper management was keeping an eye on it. They were the ones doing the main correspondence with the university officials. they tell us, and this is one of the members of management, that they saw it as a gray flag when the university's main legal officer, so their, you know, university attorney, walked into the office of the staff, spoke only to those staff writers, and in mob boss style told them it would be a shame if something happened to the newspaper if they continued their investigation. And I told them, okay, well, we have to walk to the lawyers upstairs right now, because that is a crazy situation and I don't feel comfortable giving you advice. But there are resources there that exist for these students. It's just that they are so scared to reach out for them because of things like that, of instances that aren't always as egregious as someone walking into your office and telling you it'd be a shame if something happened. And it just so happens that they're the university legal officer. But it's that sort of thing of, yeah, student journalists, the main thing I see that divides them from professional journalists is that they are inexperienced and often scared. Once they get away from that, there really is no difference between a student journalist and a professional journalist. They just have different focuses. A student at Columbia or Brown or UTD is going to focus on the issues here, and a person who writes for something like The Times or The Dallas Observer or Dallas Morning News is going to write about the focus of their paper. But the same kind of like skill set is used in both. But so long as students are shackled by that idea of, you know, I'm just a student, I shouldn't be asking these questions, the administrator knows better than me, they're going to keep running into these same issues, and we're going to see the complete death of student press and student expression at large. Student newspapers are some of the few people that are able to document and talk about the destruction of university freedoms. And if those newspapers stop doing that guardianship, that kind of like watchdog activity, then the university administration will be able to run free and censor as they wish, so that the only message that exists for students is the message they get in their email inbox saying, everything is good, please ignore the flooding building.
Yeah, and that's, and there's always the like you said, like, and we have some authors for the Student Nation project from the Nation magazine, everything else, and we had a meeting with them, and they're like, no, some of these people are running newsrooms that are now bigger than the Washington Post, and as they slash budgets across the country. So student journalists are for sure on the front lines. It just gets into murky waters because of the high court, right? Because it's like, well, who owns it? And, you know, yeah, you could take me to court, because the university does lean on that, right? They lean on this concept of who owns it, right? I mean, a personal one, I mean, we'll talk again, but like my mother got kicked out of her small liberal arts college in the 60s because of the Vietnam War, and the university knew what they were doing. It's a larger story, but they waited. So my mother knew something was going to happen, and she got into UCLA, but she had friends who had to end up going to Vietnam because they kicked them out of school without, you know, at the last minute, and then they lost their, you know, deferred treatment. So these universities, it's sadly nothing new, but as you talk about, it's now so out in the open. But I think you should be proud, I mean, about being problematic, right? Because that's what we need more of, right? We need more people that, like we talked about, comedians or that different kind of mindset. Again, don't be scared to just ask questions. And that's something that I'm with you too, because I'm like that. I bring out, like, I'm like, I don't get angry in a situation. I'm like, well, let me know more. And who can I talk to? And they're like, just leave. Like I usually it's at doctor's offices, and I'll be like, they're like, just leave. And I'm like, no, I want to know about, you say the hiring practices are the problem, but let's talk about hiring and who's the hiring officer and what's their number and things like that. But I find that, you know, we need to educate people on that, to teach them how to be problematic. And also the understanding now that everybody with a phone, everyone with a mind can be a journalist too. So I think that's kind of an important takeaway. But I don't know. I want to ask you just lastly, because I know we're going to have you on again for sure. And again, we're going to have you on talking about this stuff. But I want to know, one, where we can find your work at the Retrograde, like what we can do to support you guys, because it's, you know, about I'm big into the sharing economy and kind of doing communal stuff. So where do we find your work? And then also, like, what do you see in the horizon, not just in Texas, but with, you're going to these conferences about academic freedom and then the freedom of the press on university campuses? What are like kind of your last thoughts, but certainly where to find your stuff?
Yeah, so most of my work can be found on theretrogradenews.com. That's where The Retrograde posts all of its content, be it our bombastic investigations where we file public records requests, reveal things the school doesn't want us to know, or just kind of like our opinions on different random pop culture things, student organizations, things like that. Because, you know, we're the student newspaper. Sure, we will cover the crazy shit that happens, but we'll also cover just normal things a student would be interested in. So that's where you can find us, retrogradenews.com. That also has links to our Patreon and GoFundMe. We are, as of last December, a 501c3 now, which not super sure what that entails. I did a lot of paperwork for it, but, you know, happens. And we've really set ourselves up to be this kind of like long-running organization. I'm planning on stepping back at the end of this semester to focus on like law school applications, fellowships, and that sort, but also be on there to support the new kind of like generation of leadership of the retrograde as it moves forward towards another likely problematic and dramatic year of student journalism. And then to your question of, you know, what does this kind of like say about, you know, the academic freedom, freedom of press. I think that right now we are in a time of kind of like extreme volatility. The way that universities and people at universities, people who have a kind of like value in them, be it alumni or local communities, reacts to these changes is going to permanently mold how the university reacts to expression and to academic freedom. Right now, it is kind of like on track for universities to have no academic freedom in the name of preserving what little federal and state dollars they get as tuition dollars continue to go down, as enrollment continues to go down. And it's going to be a big question for universities of, well, how much are we willing to sacrifice? How much are we willing to give up of what it means to be an academic institution if it means we can continue running as a business and we can keep paying our administrators very large six, sometimes seven-figure salaries just to file paperwork and be a spokesman. And then when it comes to freedom of press, if we give away what little remains of that at universities and kind of like subsume to the will of the university, press won't be free on campuses. It will simply be another PR branch for the school that is run using abusive labor of students who work far too many hours for far too little pay, all in the name of making the school look good and brushing aside what could have been an actual valid concern, an actual valid investigation. If things aren't done now to stop that change, then, you know, it'll be much harder in the future. There's this kind of like fun quote from Antonio Gramsci about now being the time of monsters. And I think that, you know, he wrote it back in the 20th century. It still applies today. The monsters are just very open for the most part.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. You brought it up and I was thinking about it, like reading the local USC news, the campus news, and they had major cuts at the medical school. And they, you know, and that, but, and then in the article I'm reading, it's so like, again, like you're saying, business oriented, that they mentioned the three administrators and they mentioned their salaries, which was into the tones of millions of dollars. And then they have them writing about, you know, oh, our hearts and minds go out to the people we're firing, et cetera. And none of the pieces from the local paper, or certainly the university paper, they mention the fact that, do these people take a pay cut? You talk about administrators. Anyway, it just popped in my head. So I'll let you leave, but it just popped in my head. And I've seen that with other student journalists. So it's very important, the work you do. And hopefully when you do go to law school, you'll inspire more people to do it. Because, yeah, too often we get in, and this happens, and again, we talk about the difference between quote unquote regular journalism, right? But it happens all the time where we just listen to the PR, we get a PR sheet and we write a newspaper article about it. But I just want to thank you so much for joining me. My guest has been Gregorio Olivares Gutierrez. He's the editor-in-chief of the retrogradenews.com. You can find more about UT Dallas. And again, like there's a wide selection of articles there. He's also a freelance writer. He writes for the Dallas Observer. All these things will be linked into on Sheer Post. And hopefully we'll have him start writing more about UT and what's happening on and academic freedom as well. So thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.